I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show. My name is Adam Bayfield and I'll be your host for this one. And this other bloke here is Tony Kerr.
Hey.
Tony, we seem to be on the beach again.
Definitely, yeah. A lot of beach.
And not just any beach. We're on Petit Port, another of Guernsey's kind of premier beaches. In fact, my favourite Guernsey beach. In fact, in my very biased opinion, one of the best beaches in the world.
Big opinions, yeah. It's a top flight beach for sure.
Premier League.
Champions League beach.
ICC Division 1.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's only fitting, really, isn't it? When we're discussing, you know, a test series involving the West Indies, that, you know, given the, you know, the amazing beaches on offer over there, that, you know, we kind of try and bring you a flavour of some of the best beaches that we think in the British Isles. I mean, so just to, I guess, paint the picture, Petit Port is on Guernsey's south coast at the bottom of some pretty big cliffs, and we're sat kind of nestled in by the rocks at the bottom. But what makes it so special is that the beaches here on the south coast are generally quite rocky, or around this area quite rocky, but yeah, there's just a massive expanse of sand at low tide, which we're going to go and explore in a minute.
Yeah, it's kind of vast swathe of golden sand, and it's just glorious. But as you say, we're at the foot of the cliff. I think we counted them once. There's 375 steps to get down, and crucially back up. And when you're carrying a laptop and podcast equipment back up, it might be even tougher than normal. But yeah, the other day I said to you, because, you know, we've decided we're just going to start podcasting on the beach, because, you know, why not? And the other day I said to you, well, I guess, you know, the dream is to do a podcast on Petit Port one day. And you're like, well, why don't we just do that? And I was like, oh yeah, we could just do that.
The achievable dream.
And in fact, in a lot of ways, it's a perfect beach for podcasting, because it's usually, because of those steps, it's usually pretty quiet. You know, the steps kind of keep the riff-raff away, if that's not too condescending a term to use. But actually, because it's such a nice day and the summer holidays, there are quite a few people around, and I don't think anyone's noticed that we've whipped the microphones out yet. But yes, it might.
We might get a few hecklers.
But I was going to say, what a treat for them. You come down to Petit Port, you're expecting just a day at the beach, and you end up with a live World Cricket Show.
Well, you think, you come down on a day like this, you think, could it get any better? Yes, is the answer. In fact, actually, we enjoyed a wonderful cricket moment here quite a few years ago, didn't we? Watching the end of the test, I've now forgotten which series it was.
It was the 2013 Ashes.
It was
a Trent Bridge test when Jimmy Anderson was taking those wickets to win the game.
Yeah, we stood in the sea, watched the end of it on my phone, sort of waist deep in the water. It was quite amazing.
It tells you that
so good I'd forgotten which series it was.
Well, it tells you that was quite a long time ago, because I remember at the time being like, watching cricket on a phone, this is incredible, we're living in the future. So yeah, we've got some happy cricket memories from here already. Played cricket down here quite a bit, haven't we? A bit of beach cricket, and making some more great memories today. You're ready to go. You've had your chicken wrap. It's becoming a bit of a tradition.
Yeah, right, so almost exactly the same meal as last pre-pod meal, just presented in a slightly different way. Goujons instead of southern fried, wrap instead of baguette, sweet chilli instead of mayo.
And there's no kiosk here, there's no amenities. So you had to pop somewhere on your way here, which made you about 20 minutes late. And you're quite out of breath when you got here, because you sprinted down the steps to try and placate me a bit, I think. But that potentially involved you pushing some children out the way. They looked a bit miffed when they turned up a few minutes later.
Yeah, it's quite narrow steps as you come down, and yeah, it's a sort of like a sort of 10-pin bowling ball as I kind of just careered down them, bundling people out of the way as I went.
Well, you made it though, and we're sat on this enormous rock overlooking the bay, just watching a few boats pottering about out there. And we have got a lot of cricket to talk about. I should say as well, for new listeners, we obviously have mentioned this in the last couple of pods, but if you are joining us for the first time and you're wondering like what we're doing, recording a podcast together, what people are doing being on the beach and stuff, like it is worth just underlining the fact that the pandemic has effectively been brought under control in Guernsey. The virus has, to all intents and purposes, been eliminated here. So we're in a very, very fortunate position compared to the rest of the world. What are we approaching 80 days without a new case? So we're incredibly lucky here. Life is back to normal with no social distancing or anything like that, at least for the time being. You know, there's a big question about when we're going to open the borders and what will happen then, but we're kind of getting on with things while we can, and that does mean that we can podcast together, Tone. And again, what a treat for the world, not just the people on the beach here. Big cricket discussion to have today because Test cricket is well and truly back, and we've got another excellent Test match to talk about from England's home series with the West Indies. But actually, just one quick note before we get going: as we discussed and as we assumed on last week's show, the T20 World Cup has indeed been postponed. Did you see this, Tone?
Yeah.
So it was due to take place in Australia in October, but they have postponed it for a year. It looks likely that the IPL will fill the void and take place in its stead, probably in the UAE, because obviously, unfortunately, the pandemic seems to be worsening in India. So, yeah, probably not a surprising decision, I guess, but one that, you know, hasn't been crystallised until now. I suppose, yeah, the fact that the tests have been played in the last couple of weeks and have gone really well does kind of show that biosecure cricket is possible, but I guess it's much harder at a global tournament with teams coming from all over the world and presumably a lot more players involved, a lot more backroom staff and people involved. It's just a much harder thing to pull off, I suppose, than just a bilateral series.
Yeah, quite. I mean, it's not a surprising decision, is it? I don't know too much about the situation on the ground in Australia, but I know there's been some kind of ramping up of lockdown locally, hasn't there, in Melbourne, you know, in recent weeks and potentially other places as well. So it obviously, you know, it's a situation that's kind of changing all the time, I guess. And for a tournament or an event that on that scale, it's probably a later decision maybe than many would have expected in a way, but I guess, yeah, it has to be made at some point. I wasn't exactly clear from the news whether it meant, because obviously there's supposed to be a T20 World Cup next year as well anyway, whether the Australian T20 World Cup is being postponed to next year and therefore the one in India will be pushed back as well, or whether the Indian one will just be played as usual and then Australia will host in a couple of years. It wasn't quite clear from their release.
I think it's the former. I think they've postponed both by a year, so it'll be in Australia next year and then in India the following year. I mean, it was already a bizarre situation, you know, that there was such a long gap between T20 World Cups and then two come along at once, but it's kind of made even more bizarre now that, yeah, it'll be 5.5 years between T20 World Cups and then 1 year between T20 World Cups, which is a slightly strange situation. But obviously some of that is was out of their hands, and it is what it is. So just to kind of to flag that at the start, but let's get going. Let's dive into the Test cricket that's been going on this week. As I say, I've got my laptop with me, I've got the scorecard open here, got all me bits and bobs, all me tabs, although I've just seen that I've got a tab open that's a YouTube video called Phil Dunphy's Funniest Moments.
So there you go, just on point.
Gives you some indication of what I've been doing this morning. But yes, let me bring the scorecard up here. So after the thrilling return of Test cricket in Southampton last week, the series between England and the West Indies continued in Manchester, and the excitement continued too. It was another excellent Test match. This time, England won it to level things up. West Indies won the toss this time and elected to field first. So England was sent in to bat. They had a difficult start. They were at one stage 29 for 2 and then 81 for 3. But then a pretty remarkable partnership between Dom Sibley and Ben Stokes. They put on 260 runs together. They both faced more than 350 balls. It was very patient progress. Sibley finished with 120 from 372 balls. Stokes finished with 176 from 356 balls. They finally declared on 469 for 9. West Indies in response were going along pretty nicely, and it did seem like the game was headed for a draw, especially because the entire third day was lost to rain. But then a burst from Stuart Broad and Chris Wokes on the fourth afternoon saw West Indies collapse to be 287 all out. England then put their foot on the gas in their third innings to try and set a target. They declared on 129 for three with another half century for Stokes. That set West Indies a target of 312. That was always going to be out of reach, but they just needed to try and survive the remainder of the fifth day. But they couldn't. A couple of half centuries for Brooks and Blackwood, but wickets for Broad, Wokes and Stokes and Bess, wickets shared around, meant that they were eventually all out for 198. And that gave England a big victory by 113 runs. So this is another very enjoyable test match, Tony. I'd say probably fair to say that it was a slow burn to begin with. And as I say, a whole day was lost to rain. But it was certainly an exciting finale. You watched most of the final day live, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, real treat. Although I did have what I think was some mild food poisoning, which kind of allowed me to take a day off work and watch most of the cricket.
That really came along at the right time for you, didn't it?
Yeah. No, it was a
lucky boy.
It's been an absolute triumph, I think. And so much to enjoy in this. A great response from England. We pride ourselves on not being too reactionary, don't we, on this pod? Even though we have been prone to the old flip-flop.
We pride ourselves incorrectly on not being too reactionary. Yeah.
Look, we're not very reactionary, that's a fact. So, I thought England would have enough to come back in the series and still go on to win it. And, I've been proved right at this point, although there's a long way to go yet. It was some really impressive stuff. Obviously, Ben Stokes, another headline performance from him, pretty exciting final day all round the way things developed.
Yeah, well, you mentioned us about us kind of flip flopping a bit. So this is my question to you, Ree. So on the last podcast, I think I started by asking you whether we might have underestimated West Indies on the preview, but my question to you this time is, did we overestimate West Indies? Where do you sit on West Indies now? Because this was, after that brilliant performance in the first test, there was a real turnaround in this one, and it just, felt like the balance of power had shifted a bit. Or is that flip-flopping too far?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got it pretty much right so far. I think anyone who...
We are brilliant, aren't we?
Yeah, we are just spot on. But when you look at the West Indies record overall in the last few years, obviously, as we said, they have done well against England in particular, which probably, influences any judgment slightly, on our part and certainly within kind of British English circles. I think that the issues kind of that persist, were at the fore in this match, they probably just don't have quite enough in the batting department at the moment to be, properly dangerous team. They will cause they will win matches, as we said, the bowling attack looks absolutely fit for purpose and to be a top line attack, but not quite enough runs. But on the flip side, England perhaps would have won much more comfortably had that day not been washed out entirely than they did, picking up the wicket they needed with sort of 15 overs to go or whatever on the final day. But were it not for some, shall we say, certainly in the context of the last 5 years, some kind of uncharacteristically dogged England batting, then England wouldn't have been in that situation. So I think, a bit of credit has to go to England rather than saying, well, West Indies aren't quite as good as we thought.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was kind of teeing you up for a bit of devil's advocate there, but I don't think anyone should be writing West Indies off or considering that first test to be a fluke. I mean, I actually thought they weren't bad by any means. I actually thought they bowled pretty well in England's first innings. One of the reasons that partnership was such slow going at times was because West Indies were bowling very tight, weren't they? Kemar Roach, what did he go? Something like, I've got it written down here. He bowled 521 balls without taking a wicket in Test cricket, but he was bowling really well in that time. He was bowling superbly, and they Stokes and Sibley had to defend because the bowling was very good, but ultimately they just couldn't find a way to break that partnership, and England kind of got away from them from there. And as you say, for all their undeniable, I think, improvement in Test cricket. There is still a fragility about the West Indies batting, especially without Bravo and Hetmyer, who obviously haven't travelled to England for this tour. And yeah, they collapsed on the fourth afternoon, and that cost them in the end. You feel that 450, which is obviously what England got, is probably just too many for the West Indies at the moment. Like, they need their bowlers to restrict the opposition to 300, 350 tops, and then they're right in the game. Their batsmen can cope with that, but 400 is just kind of too many. And while, you know, and that is, it can be successful, but there's quite a narrow margin for error there, isn't there? You know, there's really placing a lot of pressure on that bowling attack, which, good as it can't deliver every single time. Arguably, they made the wrong decision at the toss as well. Like, they obviously put England in. It turned out to be a pretty good wicket. They did that, I think, because of the overhead conditions, but it turned out to be a pretty good wicket. It was a difficult one to call. I think Joe Root said he was quite pleased he lost the toss. But one slightly strange thing about this series is that in both tests, there's been a clear beneficiary at the toss, but both times it's been the team losing the toss who have had that benefit, which is, you know, which is unusual.
Yeah, I think as well, you know, we'll come on to Ben Stokes in a minute, but you can't really have it, you can't on one hand say, as people are saying, you know, we're in the presence of greatness here, you know, talking about Ben Stokes and a performance where he kind of powerhouse performance with the bat in terms of sort of every style possible, and influence it with the ball and in the field, and you know, you look at what player that we're talking about, potentially, or we will talk about, as one of the all-time greats, well, putting himself in the frame for that, and then say, oh, but you know, West Indies are crap as well. Because to be great, you have to, well, you know, to show that kind of greatness, you know, you need a decent opposition to be kind of marked against and measured against. So yeah.
No, that's absolutely right. I guess it's just that for the, you know, slightly more casual fan, or, you know, someone just kind of dipping into this test, they might just think, oh, West Indies collapsed again. You know, that's just the way it's been for 10, 15, 20 years. I do still think this team is a lot better than that, but just there does remain that fragility in the batting. I think they looked a bit tired as well. Like, that's probably another issue for them, is just perhaps they still don't have the depth of a kind of top tier test team. Like, these games are coming thick and fast. They tend to come thick and fast anyway in modern test tours, but especially this series, because they're trying to, you know, obviously keep it as brief as possible so that West Indies don't have to spend too long in the country. There's not much time off between these games, and West Indies played the same bowling attack here, perhaps because they just don't feel that the same quality exists outside of that first choice attack. But, you know, you looked at Shannon Gabriel. I mean, he was absolutely done in at the end of this game. Really, the best thing would have been probably to have rested him from this one and saved him for the third test, but they perhaps just didn't feel that was a good option. So, but speaking of changes, I mean, they might have to look at the batting as well. As we say, there's still a weakness in the batting. So perhaps less in terms of tiredness as when we're looking at the bowling attack, but just to try and bolster things up a bit. Is it time up? Is it the end of the road for Shea Hope, do you think? He's not had a good series so far.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, when you look at that batting lineup, and it's something England have been short of probably in the last few years. You know, I can mention Ben Stokes again, until Ben Stokes is, you know, now developing into that kind of, you know, like talismanic batter as much as anything, is that I think, yeah, West Indies, all of the batsmen are kind of, one, you know, they're waiting for someone to put the hand up and kind of mark themselves out as a regular, yeah, you know, as a reliable source of big runs. And yeah, obviously Shea Hope hasn't had the best of it, has he? But yeah, I don't know what the answer is in terms of who they bring in.
No, they, as you say, they've probably got a few too many who are a little bit hit and miss. Like, what, they can be absolutely sensationally good. You know, so they've got so much talent, and we've seen them do it, but they're just lacking a little bit of consistency. Potentially Darren Bravo is that man, although he had a poor run of it before he came back into the side last year. You can't sort of rely really on anyone in the batting lineup, including Craig Brathwaite, who you would say should be that guy. But Shea Hope, I just wonder, you know, have we all been duped a bit by those Headingley hundreds? Again, you mentioned that West Indies have done really well against England in recent years, and those hundreds obviously came against England. And has that kind of pulled the wool over our eyes a bit, to the fact that, aside from that, he's not really done a lot in Test cricket? I suppose it's not just that. There's his 50-over form as well. I think he's averaging 52 in ODIs. Like, he is one of the top ODI batsmen in the world, but his record in Test cricket, like his overall record is not great. And then since those Headingley hundreds, which were 3 years ago now, let's not forget, since then it's borderline disastrous. He's averaging 24 with 250s and no hundreds in 34 innings since then. And since the start of 2019, he's averaging less than Kemar Roach in Test cricket. So, you know, he's such a talent, isn't he? He's a really great batsman to watch, but it's just not happening at the moment. Well, anyway, turning to England then, you know, obviously they'll be very pleased with the performance. It was an excellent response after a relatively underwhelming performance in that first Test. Well, I don't know what you think. Like, you're obviously saying people talking about, but we'll talk about Ben Stokes. But is there any sense that people are getting carried away a little bit with this? I mean, it was a very good performance, but I wonder if it feels like a even better performance than it was because Stokes and Sibley batted so long. It felt like that first innings total was absolutely monstrously big because they batted forever. But actually, you know, 460, is that actually just par in Test cricket? I don't know. They haven't done it very much, England, over the last few years, so
yeah,
it's kind of unusual.
Feels impressive.
But yeah. Should you be that blown away by 460 in the first innings?
True. I mean, yeah, that's obviously been a massive issue for England in recent years. And after, like in South Africa, they've posted a couple of decent first innings totals, didn't they? It seems like they're turning a corner slightly in terms of that temperament, mentality issue that perhaps they had previously, now with Silverwood, you know, at the helm. It was a proper Test win, wasn't it, for them? And Sibley's innings and Stokes, obviously, yeah, proper Test knocks to set up that victory. So, yeah, anyone complaining at that, I think, is just wide of the mark.
Silly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know,
it's a silly person.
If your aim is to win the game, then England went about it in the best possible way, and that's how they should approach most Test matches they play. As for Stokes, I don't know. I mean, the regularity with which he's now producing bits of magic, you know, huge performances, influencing every aspect of the game, it is tough to not get a bit carried away, I think. You know, you look at that performance. Obviously, you know, lots to be made of the fact that it was, you know, his longest time at the crease in the first innings, his slowest 100, and then, you know, England's fastest 50 by an opener in the second innings. Two completely different modes and executed brilliantly. Obviously took the, you know, broke the key partnership on the last day, demonstrated his commitment and kind of heroicism on the pitch with that bit of fielding off his own bowling, which kind of caught the eye. Like running to the boundary to chase a lost cause, effectively. I mean, yeah, you really can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah, I agree with all that, and I don't want to sound like I'm being, you know, Nicky negative over here, but do you not think, is that not verging into the kind of Virat Kohli territory of just like literally anything he does? He takes a simple catch and people are like, it's that man Ben Stokes again, or like chasing that down off his own bowling. I mean, you don't see that very
agree,
much. That was
but
good.
You don't see that, yeah.
But yes, is there not a little bit of like Ben Stokes? You know, he like there. People are raving about his haircut. It's like,
yeah, it's just like, no, I do agree.
Yeah,
I get that, and I find that kind of hero worship really off-putting and
yeah,
slightly annoying. But that said, yeah, I wouldn't go. You know, I wouldn't. I'm not going to stan, or what they call it on the internet, Ben Stokes, and kind of, you know, but yeah, he's doing some incredible things at the moment.
Who are you shipping Ben Stokes with at the moment?
I don't know what that means.
More internet jargon. Are you shipping yourself with Ben Stokes?
But I mean, you've got to be pretty appreciative,
lolcats,
as a cricket
internet
fan.
That's internet speak.
Yeah, pretty on the pulse. You know, just for the moments he's giving us. But it is quite amazing when you see that first innings patience he put in, particularly when, you know, there was one particular shot that he played which was pretty jaw-dropping, that kind of
on
drive for six.
Yeah.
For a batsman, when you can play those shots, to then have the discipline not to do that is quite impressive, I think. Do you know what I mean? If you know that's in your locker, why wouldn't you just be like, well, you know, let's take it on? So actually to adjust his game and do that is absolutely incredible. And then, yeah, some of the shots he played on the final morning, you know, it's just classic Ben Stokes at the moment, but were really impressive. And you look, what is he? He's now the number one all-rounder in the world. Perhaps we'll talk about that in a minute. The third best batsman in the rankings as well. England's best batsman. Yeah, a game changer with the ball and probably with the best fielder. I don't know. Am I getting carried away?
No, I don't think you are. As I say, I don't want anyone to think that I'm trying to be a killjoy here, because, you know, the thing of like the Virat Kohli comparison or the hero worship, like, I do get frustrated with that. It, as you say, I do find it a bit off-putting. But on the other hand, like, as someone who loves cricket and wants cricket to flourish, is it not better that we have those superstars that kids are going to grow up idolising and stuff? It's going to draw people into the game. So, yeah, like, England having someone like that, surely that's a good thing for cricket lovers. And yeah, it's very difficult to say anything bad about him at the moment. I mean, I would still maintain that it is only really in the last year that he's reached that level. Like, I always thought he was a good player, but it used to frustrate me that he was talked about in a way that he perhaps didn't merit before. But certainly since the World Cup last year, it's very difficult to argue that he's overrated anymore. And he really has kind of taken off in the last year, and his form with both bat and ball has been genuinely extraordinary, particularly with the bat. 4 centuries in Test cricket at an average of 60, was terrific with the ball in South Africa as well. And yeah, I do think, well, what do you think? Is he the most valuable cricketer in the world at the moment? Is there anyone that you would swap him for in the England team?
In the England team?
Yeah, as in, like, if you could pick
swap him out of the England team.
Yeah, but if you could somehow, like, draft in another cricketer from any other country,
yeah,
give them an English passport, but you had to, the only way you could do that was to swap Ben Stokes. Is there anyone
I don't think so. Possibly, I wouldn't, but you could make a case maybe for Steve Smith, because if you've got Steve Smith in your team, you're probably not going to lose.
You'd probably rather watch Ben Stokes.
Yeah, like...
But if you want... I think
you're pretty much unbeatable with Steve Smith in the team, because, on current, on recent form, because, you know, how does a team against you get him out and therefore win the game? If you want to win matches, then you probably want... You probably wouldn't swap for anyone at the moment other than Ben Stokes. And the shots he plays are... Some of the shots he plays are ridiculous.
Yeah, and as you say, you used the word talisman before. He has become such a talismanic figure in terms of, like, his presence just lifts the team, doesn't it? And the same thing used to be true of Andrew Flintoff. Everybody feels more confident when he's in the team. He G's the players up. He's just a kind of inspirational, inspiring figure. Steve Smith was the only one I thought of that I'd possibly put above him in terms of who the most valuable cricketer in the world is right now, at least in Test cricket. But yeah, they're probably the two, aren't they? Like, if you were picking a World 11, they're probably the two that you'd say are most irreplaceable. Even Kohli, someone like that. I don't know, you're spoiled for choice in the bowling attack. But anyone else that you pick there, you'd think, well, yeah, if you had to drop Kohli, then Williamson or someone could come in. You know, it wouldn't change that much, but losing Smith or Stokes from that would be a big blow. And so that's pretty, it's a pretty remarkable thing that Stokes is mentioned in the same breath as Steve Smith, who is truly one of the great cricketers, one of the great batsmen of all time, you'd have to say.
Yeah, and what Steve, I'm not an Australian obviously, and so I don't know what Steve Smith's innings and achievements means as much to Australians, but I mean it's tough to imagine that anything could be better, really, or much better than Headingley and the World Cup final. For those kind of things that are within his
moments
in his powers, to produce that is
But then I suppose that's what I previously felt about Stokes, was that he was a cricketer of moments, that he had those extraordinary moments. You know, his double hundred in South Africa. You know, that he'd have those unbelievable performances with bat and ball, but that he didn't necessarily do it on a consistent basis, and that if you looked at his overall record, it wasn't that impressive, but that those moments kind of led everyone to think that he was a better overall player than he was. But in the last year, he's actually
that's
doing it
consistently.
I mentioned he's kind of that talisman, and he's just such an all-round player as well. And one of the most impressive things about that partnership with Sibley was the running between the wickets, and that's something that tends to go under the radar a bit in cricket, not least because, well, A, it's not as eye-catching as boundary hitting, but it's also sometimes it's literally impossible to see it when you're watching the TV, because they tend to the camera tends to follow the ball as it goes out to the boundary, or, you know, as it goes out to the fielder, the outfield. But it was definitely a feature of that partnership that they were really running very well and turning ones into twos and all of that. And it's basic stuff, but it's such an important part of the game. And yeah, he does do all the basics well as doing all the extraordinary stuff well.
Yeah, I mean, what, he's England's best batsman. He's England's go-to bowler in tight situations. He's the best fielder in the team. He's, by all accounts, the fittest member of the team. Yeah, he's all right.
Well, just talking about that partnership, just on Dom Sibley. I mean, it was a remarkable partnership. I think they batted 568 balls. Now, in terms of balls faced, that is England's second longest partnership of the 21st century and the longest for 10 years. Can you work out which one was longer? I know what your memory is like, Tane. 10 years ago, there was a longer one. Any guesses? It's a famous partnership.
Kirk.
No.
Peterson.
No. Who batted forever for England 10 years ago?
Trott.
Yeah. And?
Bell.
No. Someone you would not expect.
Trott. Can you cut all these guesses? Trott.
Well, I'll cut about 300 of them and I'll just leave in a few.
Pryor.
No.
Trott. And
someone you would really not expect it to be. Okay, another clue. It's someone who's still in the England team now.
Trott and Broad.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
First time.
Yeah, remarkable.
First guess. I can't believe it. Yeah, against Pakistan at Lord's in 2010, when Broad got that 169, whatever it was. So it's the longest, and that's obviously a famous partnership. So famous.
So famous
that you remembered it immediately.
Because on the beach.
So it's the longest since then. And yeah, just on Sibley, I mean, it was a tremendous knock from him as well. He took a bit of stick, didn't he, for the pace of the innings, because it was pretty slow. You know, you've kind of touched on this already, but what did you make of that? He faced 312 balls to get to his century, which is the slowest in all Test cricket for 8 years. But yeah, do you think that was somewhat misplaced criticism, or the fact that England won in the end, does that just kind of render that all a bit silly?
Massively misplaced, I think.
Yeah.
That's literally what England have been crying out for, isn't it, for years. You obviously wouldn't want a team of Dom Sibleys, because you probably wouldn't win the match, but there's definitely room for at least one. So yeah, I think that's well wide of the mark.
You're kind of inching further and further back on that rock. You're precariously near the edge now.
Well, the thing is, you know,
your
bum gets a bit numb after a while. Yeah. I'm trying to kind of find a comfy position.
It's tough. We're putting our bodies on the line here to,
we certainly are,
to deliver this podcast. It's not a day at the beach, is it? Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, I just think, like, well, what do we want? You know, we've seen people like Bairstow and Jason Roy come into the test team and just, like, throw their wickets away by chasing wide balls. I mean, that's like, that has been England's problem for ages, and it's just really nice to see someone that can knuckle down. It may not be as box office as, you know, Ben Stokes in the second innings, but it's just exactly what England need at the moment. And it's great to see an England opener score, or a young England batsman score a second Test 100. Loads of them have got one. Your Sam Robsons, your Adam Lyths, you know, going back a long way now. But none of them have got two. So that's,
yeah, definitely.
That's an exciting thing. He looks the real deal in that sense.
And as you say, he's still fresh on the Test scene. Yeah, you know, give him a bit of time to develop. You know, what's to say his strike rate won't improve as he gets more kind of comfortable, you know, with his place in the side and you know, comfortable in the surroundings. So, yeah, give him a bit of break. And, you know, there's plenty of players around him who are still going to happy to go in and, like, chase wide balls and not make any runs, so it'll be, yeah, there's something for everyone in this team.
People are delighted to do that. the one slightly unfortunate thing is that I felt that, you know, it was one of the first times that I really kind of noticed the absence of a crowd, because he really deserved a standing ovation when he came off, and there's just nothing. So, well, he had a standing ovation from the players' balcony, obviously, but yeah, a great knock, and great to see him do it from an English perspective. Another thing great to see, Stuart Broad back in the side, back amongst the wickets, kind of cleaved the game open with that little burst on the fourth afternoon. proving a point, do you think? Proving a point to the likes of you who wanted him dropped?
I wouldn't say I wanted him dropped. I just didn't pick him for the first test. I don't think he's got anything to prove, has he? So I don't think we learned anything new. All we got reminded of, if that's a word.
Reminded?
All we got reminded of is that England are blessed with a lot of high-quality pace bowlers at the moment. And even though, you know, Anderson hasn't got that long left, you know, we probably shouldn't take it for granted because it's not going to last forever. But Wood could break down at any moment. You know, Archer could go AWOL. We'll come on to that. So we won't take it for granted. But yeah, enjoy it while enjoy it at the moment, and a good problem to have, as the old cliche goes.
Well, definitely. I mean, Chris Silverwood, the coach, says they're going to pick their strongest attack with a final test. Obviously, they. They did some rotation. They've rotated the entire bowling attack, not entirely new seam attack in this game, but there's going to be no thoughts of rotation for the final test for the decider. So they're going to pick what they consider to be their strongest attack. What is that, Tone? What do you think, having seen the first two tests now and seen those six seam bowlers, what do you think England's strongest seam attack is? What would you pick for the final test?
Well, I did get it right ahead of the first test, so I'll take that. So I've got some credit at the bank for when I get this spectacularly wrong.
I'm not saying what do you think they will pick, but what would you do?
I mean, it's tough. There's been some chat that it's going to be a faster pitch for the third test, I think, than the second. How that influences things, I don't know. There is a very strong case for all of them, isn't there? Which is why you've posed this very difficult question. Yeah.
Just going to keep edging backwards on the rock.
Yeah, if I fall off at the right time.
Further away.
Is Anderson going to be... is he fit?
He's fit, I think, yeah. But, I mean, we've talked about this, but is he in the three now? Because he's only... because of those injuries, he's only played four of the last 14 tests. It's more than a year since he last put in a significant performance for England. Is he a lock in that three, in the way that he used to. But do you actually say, well, yeah, he's 37, he's going to be 38 in a week or so. Actually, now is the time to move on. I kind of originally was saying this as like, just to stir things up a bit, just to be provocative.
You're believing your own hype now.
But yeah, actually, I'm starting to think, well, is he? And I'm not saying like he should never play again, but for picking the team on Friday, is he in it?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there is talk as well, isn't there? Well, there's a sense that Stokes will need, or the workload on Stokes, particularly in the bowling department, will need to be lightened, if not removed entirely. So, would you want to go in potentially with Anderson, who has been, a bit uncertain infirm of recent years.
Yeah.
Stokes, who doesn't want to be, you don't want to overwork. Wood, who has, mm-hmm. There is a risk there at any moment, I guess, that although touch wood, he has kind of turned a corner on the injury front.
Well, I think that's an argument definitely for not playing Wood and Archer together.
And Archer has had injuries as well. So,
well, also both of them are just better suited to being that kind of impact bowler, bowling in shorter bursts, shorter spells, rather than asking them to do the kind of donkey work.
And harsh to leave out Wokes. So, there's a player who, the stats were widely publicised after this, has got to 100 test wickets and 1,000 runs, faster than pretty much all of the great, or in fewer tests than most, or if not all of the great all-rounders.
And his record in England is just unbelievable. So you should probably play him in England. Now, I think that what you're saying about fitness and Stokes' workload is another argument for playing Wokes. And I might well go Wokes, Broad, Archer at this point. Now, again, A, Anderson will probably be man of the match now. But B, that does not mean that I wouldn't play Anderson for the next game necessarily. It's certainly that I wouldn't, take him on a tour or whatever. But I just think right now, and having seen the performances in the first two games, that's probably what I'd go with.
We'll come on to it in a sec. The Archer situation is a delicate man management situation because, do they want to be seen to be sort of punishing him twice? But then, is he going to be in the best kind of shape having sat in a room doing nothing for 5 days playing Xbox? It's really hard.
Yeah, well, and then you could easily play Wood in that case, who, as we say, has been so good recently and is not always fit. So if he is fit, make the most of it and play him. In a way, I just think, well, I'm happy with any bowling attack that they put out.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument for play the side that's just won.
I would definitely like to see one of Wood or Archer, because I do just like that, you know, having that pace, having that X factor, which is a bit of a cliche. But, I mean, yes, playing the side that just won, I mean, that may well be good enough to win again. But in terms of, like, just picking your absolute strongest side, if that's what you want to do, which presumably you do, then I would definitely like to see one of Wood or Archer. But whatever they go with, I'd be reasonably happy with, and that's quite a good situation, quite a healthy situation for England, and not the situation as it was a year or so ago.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Speaking of Archer, you've touched on this a bit, but he was obviously left out at the last minute from that second test because he breached the protocols and went home during, you know, on the way from Southampton to Manchester, and kind of revealed this to one of the backroom staff who passed it on, and they took action and left him out. So it's a tricky one to talk about in a way, but what did you make of the whole thing?
Well, yeah, it's very unfortunate. I mean, yeah, there's so many things at play, aren't there? Archer wrote a column today in the Mail, and there's a few bits in that I don't know, a few of the things he said I think were maybe poorly advised, or I don't know, just kind of comes across as a bit cheesed off, which maybe he's got a right to be for the the discussion of him, the player, in some circles, you know, that there seems to be. But obviously what he did, you know, it wasn't a crime, but it was in what is a very, very unique and delicate situation all round in terms of this Biosecure series, the amount of effort, money, and risk as well that's gone into putting it on. There's no way that the players didn't know exactly what would be required of them, because otherwise that's a massive oversight from the ECB, and I'm sure that wouldn't have been the case. So in that sense, you kind of can't see how it could have happened. Like, how did he not realise that would be in kind of contravention of what is, you know, whether or not the virus is on the way out or the way in or whatever the situation is, you know, to get the games on, this is what they had to do, and he didn't do that. So, you know, it was very, very stupid. The flip side is, though, that, you know, we've all, speaking personally, you know, the COVID guidelines, the kind of government guidelines, you know, it'd be mad to suggest or to be too moral about it, because I'm sure most people will have exercised a degree of their own common sense in how they interpret things. Now, that's not to say, like, I didn't go to like a pub during lockdown or whatever and have a lock-in, but you know, maybe you spent a few more hours out and you're doing your exercise than you're allocated or whatever. You know, for him going home, you know, there probably wasn't any risk of anything from just popping into his house and stuff, but you know, there's obviously just no room for maneuver there. So he was absolutely right that he should be, well, you know, full foul of the isolation and therefore missing the test. And it was just a very stupid thing to do.
Yeah, and there's talk as well. Well, it was certainly mentioned that he had come into contact with another individual, but we don't know whether that's a neighbour that he just happened to pass on the way in, or a friend or whatever. We don't know. I agree that column today doesn't come across very well because he just seems like annoyed and he feels kind of like he's been picked upon.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and also he mentions the fact that he's been on the receiving end of some racist abuse over the time, which obviously is you know, entirely unacceptable and there's no justification for, and quite rightly that should be pursued criminally.
But yeah, I mean, the reason that I said it's a hard one to talk about is because in a way I sort of feel like everyone's right here. Like, some people think, as you say, that this was a really serious crime, or a crime's the wrong word, but a really serious transgression, and he should face a really serious punishment. Other people think that, yeah, that it does kind of play into this ongoing disquiet about Archer and the treatment that he's received from certain sections of the media and the public, and that it was a mistake, but it's not, you know, that we should all move on and it's not something to dwell on. And in a way, I think both sides are right. Yeah. Like, everyone's right. I mean, the problem is, like, it is, in a way, it does feel like a very minor thing. And yeah, kind of exercising a degree of common sense or whatever, that he's just nipped home for a minute, it doesn't feel like that big a deal. But the problem is that the consequences are potentially so grave. And as you say, there's no way that he didn't know that he wasn't allowed to do that. And everyone else abided by the rules. So, I suppose what it just made me think is, like, it is worth just pausing and thinking about what a strange situation we're in. Like, if you'd been asleep for a year and you woke up and read the headline, Joffre Archer dropped for breaching biosecure protocols, you'd be like, what is going on? Like, yeah. You'd be very confused. It is very weird. It's, and it is hard to know, not necessarily what the right thing to do is, but just like to know what is serious and what isn't. And like the fact that you pop home to check your boiler or whatever, and then suddenly you're accused of potentially costing your employer tens of millions of pounds and potentially putting people's lives at risk. Like, that is the case, but it's also, it's quite a lot of pressure on people, and it's quite a lot, isn't it? And I mean, that's the situation that we're in. It's a weird situation, and it's, you know, to some extent, I have some sympathy on that basis.
No, quite. You know, the flip side to that, though, is that when I talk about people exercising their own common sense, you know, it was people's civic duty to abide by the guidelines. And I think, you know, most people would have abided by it 98% of the time, whatever. That's the only difference, isn't it, is that it's his job to have abided by these guidelines, and he didn't. So I don't think he can have any complaints about being criticised or being sanctioned by the ECB.
No, I quite agree, yeah.
Beyond that, though, you know, I don't think it is something to necessarily dwell on too long. Hopefully it'll be a bit of a wake-up call, because, you know, the unfortunate thing is it does feed the kind of the myth of Archer as maybe being a bit lackadaisical or whatever, you know, whatever people have projected onto him. Whether that's the case or not, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because, you know, would it have been as big a story if another player had done it, if Holly Pope had done it? Or Dom Sibley, or Rory Burns, you know, probably not. But then they're not as famous as him. If Ben Stokes had done it, it probably would have been. So it's a tricky one. But I do definitely come down with you in thinking, well, yeah, he knew the deal. And it is so serious because it's such a serious situation that the world is in.
Yeah. And I don't think it kind of necessarily affects his, and it shouldn't affect his short, medium, long term future as an England player, or reputation. No. You know, England players have done some weird, wonderful and stupid things, haven't they, over the years, you know, but very much more dangerous things, you know, the Stokes Bristol incident, Andrew Flintoff and the Fred Lowe incident. You know, people do things that that just aren't, you know, don't kind of make sense to maybe the normal person in the street.
Yeah, I suppose that's...
And are forgiven, so...
I suppose that's kind of what I'm getting at, though, in saying that, you know, I'm sort of split on it, I'm torn on it, because it's really, like, what he did on a surface level is, like, nowhere near as bad as those things you're talking about, certainly the Ben Stokes incident, you know, in normal circumstances. Like, he literally just went home. But the potential consequences are way more serious than what Stokes did, so in that sense, it's a little bit of a difficult one,
but. At the time, you know, if England had been on that tour of the Caribbean and there'd been like some kind of, I don't know, wide-ranging shark infestation in the seas of the world, and literally the only way the test series or the tour had been put on is if everyone understood you cannot go in the water or you can't go out on a pedalo, and he'd done that, you'd be like, well, that's the one thing we asked you not to do. And so it's like, to do the one thing they're asked not to do is leave the bubble, and that's what he did. So yeah, I don't know, like, I'm sure we'll all laugh about it in 20 years time. And you know, we're here sitting on a rock on the beach chatting about this in a COVID-free island in a fortunate situation. I don't know how many pages long the guidance was, or the documentation or whatever that the players have been given to read, and you know, who knows. But as you say, no one else made that mistake. So I just hope that Archer, that the path forward kind of clears up a little bit, because certainly reading the tone of that column, you do get the sense that he feels a bit persecuted at the moment. And I know there was obviously that controversy, or that kind of the stuff that surrounded his selection for the World Cup, and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. We've discussed that at length, and I do think there were reasonable discussions to be had at that point as to whether it would upset the balance to bring him in. And obviously some people felt that in some quarters those discussions were veering on the kind of on the racist and and whatnot. So I don't know, it is just a bit of a shame at the moment. And I'm sure there's he's clearly a great personality, a great cricketer, and you'd hate for someone who could be a real
superstar,
without being too cliche, but yeah, a role model and a superstar and a brilliant part of England's future to be kind of hammered down and chipped away at. So it's still very early days, isn't it? So you just hope that, you know, I hopefully we're not contributing to that, because I think we've been pretty measured.
We are brilliant, aren't we?
I think it's right to be, you know, brisk and a kind of forthright sanction that was placed on him, and then we all move on and let's crack on.
Let's
half
move
an
on.
Hour later, enough said.
Yeah. Think, yeah. All right. Well, the series poised at 1-1, and it's set up fantastically well for.
I was having a good time.
The decider on Friday. What an exciting prospect that is, Tane. A final Test decider. We haven't really had many of those in Test cricket for a while. So I couldn't have asked anything more for this first Test series back. I'm going to put you on the spot again here. What's your feeling? What's the feeling in your waters? Which way is the wind blowing?
Well, I'm not going to deviate. England to win it and take the series.
I've flip-flopped around. I said England 2-1 at the start. I said West Indies 2-1 after one test. So whatever happens, I'll be right.
Yeah.
unless it's 1-1. Unless it's a draw. I'll stick to my modified guns, and I'll back West Indies to come back and win this one 2-1. I mean, the momentum's with England, but as we know, momentum isn't a thing. So, I'll go for West Indies. I do worry that they might, you know, I worry about their energy levels, particularly the bowlers. I'll go for West Indies to win. All right, well, that's probably going to be it for the World Cricket Show this time. Have you enjoyed this one, Tane?
It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's quite nice doing this on Petit Pour, isn't it? What a dream. Dreams do come true. and it's been, as, you know, just as good as I imagined.
Where are we going to go next?
Well, where do you go from here, really?
True. Herm, I think, probably.
Herm, yeah, is a good shout. Sark, you know, might be harder to do it in like at the hour and a half window that I'm usually allowed to come and do this. But, well, maybe just back here.
Yeah.
Maybe just back here again. I've got about 10 minutes before we leave, so I'm going to have to wrap this up quickly so I can get a very quick swim in. But no, it's been good. I enjoy doing these on the beach, Tane. We'll be back with another podcast, probably from the beach, next time. In the meantime, if you enjoy the World Cricket Show, get involved on the internet. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/cricketshow. We're on Twitter at Cricket Show, on Instagram at World Cricket Show. Tony's just taking a picture of me at the moment, probably to put on one of those accounts. Get a good snap, a good pic for...
It's like a cricket podcast come travel guide now.
A good pic for social mead. Send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com. Hang on, just sit up straight. And if you enjoy the show, then do write a review and leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you use, because that does help to bring new people onto the banter bus. I wanted to rebrand the show, change the name, banter bus. What do you think of that?
I'm not convinced.
Well, Tony's left the rock now.
I've exited the biosecure rock.
To take these pictures, so I'm probably just going to wrap it up. I was going to say, you know, I'll put my laptop away. I was going to say that seeing loads of you on the beach at the moment, because I was on the beach with you on Sunday for my son's first birthday.
I'm standing up, I feel like I'm about to do some karaoke to the beach. Might just belt out Angels or something.
I'll stand up as well.
Do a little duet, maybe.
It's quite weird podcasting standing up. Just like,
I feel like some Russell Brand, doesn't it?
I just look like I'm absolutely laying into Ben Stake.
Still God, Butler out, is it? Oh,
Butler! Get him out!
I'm going to sit down again. Very nice afternoon on the beach. Good birthday.
Yeah, Teddy was very happy. You got him a really nice present. That's
Thanks,
what I was going to say. Very nice present. You got him a little embroidered gown, embroidered with his name, which is very sweet. I suspect that your girlfriend Emily may have had something to do with it. But you got him a really nice present when he was born as well, a cricket jumper embroidered with his initials. So when it comes to embroidered gifts, you're running a pretty tight ship at the moment.
Well, it's good to hear. Yeah, keeping the embroiderers of Guernsey in good business.
It was really nice, really, really nice. So thank you for that. But yeah, that's about it from us, I think. Have we got time for a swim?
Definitely.
We're very quick. All right, we'll see you next time, everyone. Enjoy the test this week, and we'll be back after that to talk about it. Until then, bye-bye for now.
Cheers.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.